Hello and welcome to World and Union Balls.ie's weekly rugby show, getting an outside perspective on Irish rugby and on the game itself. I'm Mick McCarthy, joined as always by Morris Brosnan. Morris, how are you getting on?
Great, Mick. Yeah, how about you?
Not too bad, not too bad. We have lots of rugby to talk about, but just before we start, a little bit of in-podcast rivalry between the two of us this week. We're both bleary-eyed after long night and Sunday night, staying up all night to watch the NFL playoffs.
Yeah.
You a Kansas City Chiefs fan and me a long-suffering New England Patriots fan. Finally some glory. We've made the Super Bowl.
It was like the most fun game and the most disappointing ending possibly imaginable. I mean, the amount of hilarious mistakes. Like, I'm not just talking about errors in terms of in-game errors. I'm talking about like D Ford, for some reason, not looking beside him and being offside.
Edmund just lining up offside. Yeah.
Edmund doing everything he can to touch the ball and managing not to. Maybe Tom Brady trying to pick third and goal.
There was a point where I just went, this sport is stupid. I was just laughing. Kind of maniacally, it has to be said, because I'm on my own in the sitting room at 2:30 in the morning at the time, and sort of like thinking my team is about to get crushed and lose the conference championship. And there's definitely a maniacal twinge to my laughter as I was just thinking about how stupid this whole sport is. But an amazing night, and I'm sorry for you and your beloved Patrick Mahomes and your beloved Kansas City Chiefs, but I think they'll be back again. But I suppose that's neither here nor there for today, is it?
No, although like, it's funny that you started on that, because I was actually thinking, watching the game last night, when you look at like what the Pats were doing with Sonny Mitchell and this kind of like play action or running the ball and be able to throw, or even with Gronk, like it's something that, for, I don't know why this was in my head, but if you look at Munster, like I think what Munster need to get to is where they can actually vary their attacking game plan, so it's not just either they're going out to play up the jumper stuff like they did against Exeter, or they're going out to vary their attack with a 10 and trying, you know, getting these really sick and an amazingly talented back three actually involved.
Yeah.
Like the ability to use kind of two different platforms and in the same game, I'm talking about going back to last night, like Mitchell running the ball like 20 times in the first half, and then all of a sudden they start throwing it out wide and getting the players involved. Like that's something that I think that would be their biggest takeaway from the weekend. It's, again, I think it's been a criticism probably across the season, is their attacking structures and are they getting the most out of some, you know, unbelievably talented backs that probably aren't getting like Earls on the periphery of the game throughout. Yeah. You know what I mean? These kind of are players that you want to try and involve more. But I suppose that's something that...
Yeah, Conway, like, having the first kind of, like, real break into the 22 and, like, the 60th minute, and he chips it out into touch, you know, and you're thinking just, like, they haven't had enough reps almost in this type of game, you know, to get that. But we should, look, we will now move exclusively to the game of Rugby Union and talk about the fact that, we'll get on to Munster in a second, but the fact that our streak continues. 4 out of 4 for the Irish provinces again. No Irish team will ever lose a game unless they're playing each other, as long as we're doing this podcast.
Yeah, so we just have to, for the sake of Irish rugby, continue it on.
Yeah, exactly. So when that streak ends, so will we. Don't hold us to that. But yeah, amazing weekend again, right? So I think we all expected Leinster to do what they did in the Ricoh Arena and kind of put Wasps to the sword. And Connacht had a great win to qualify for the quarterfinals of the Challenge Cup, came from behind for a really good win in France. You know, that just seemed like a really exciting game, one of those ones that you're following on Twitter going, I wish this was on TV.
Yeah, and that's been one of the biggest changes about the Challenge Cup. In fairness, College and Connacht have shown some real creativity there in airing a lot of those games on their own websites. Yeah. And it's free. I mean, it's free. You just have to register as a fan and you get to watch them. And that, you know, like what Connacht... We can talk about this with Leinster later, but what Connacht have, like, you see the execution of good coaching in plays. Like, there's a great clip, for anybody who wants to see it, up on Twitter, of an off-the-top line-out move where they move the ball out wide. So it's like a six-man line-out. They go off the top and Bundiaki shoots up the middle and offloads to Ulden Delan. And then in the next play, they pass right, but Jack Carthy comes back left. So they swing the whole play back against him while you've got, you know, a defence drifting across. So you just catch them totally on the hop. Kind of like what Ireland did against New Zealand with Stockdale, just switching back across, except the 10 literally runs back across. And that's just down to somebody like Nigel Carlin. That's good coaching. You know, you can see, like, it's a phrase that I think fans probably rightly kind of rolled their eyes at and was like, oh, you know, like, they're a well-coached team. It's like, how do you know that? But what, and I suppose what you mean when you say that is well-executed plays like that, or, you know, never their rucks are always perfectly stocked. There's never any, you know, there's never like an overcommit or there's never an undercommit in terms of clearouts. In terms of, like, look at Leinster at the weekend, 100% in both their set pieces.
Unbelievable.
And then even really kind of small, intricate stuff, like, there's a, they ran a play that I loved in the first half. They didn't actually get a score off it, but where they had Josh Van der Flyer as a nine, so he's a scrum half off a lineup, which, I mean, Munster did as well when Tommy Donald knocked on in the first half, but instead of just standing as a nine or taking a maul or whatever his the normal role to do, he jumps into the line and operates as a lifter. And I mean, you're talking about a pod of two, so how are you going to counter against that when you don't even know that the pod is there? It doesn't exist until Van der Flyer steps in. Do you know what I mean? This is stuff that, in terms of, and that's just, again, that's down to coaching. Like, it's really kind of simple, creative stuff that players are so comfortable in what they're doing, and then they can go out and execute that. And I think, particularly in the terms of Connacht and also in Leinster, they're showing real execution of that. Like, I think Munster, I'm not saying they're not a well-coached team, but I do think that there's a lot their attacking structures need to do to get more out of, like, a centre partnership that two really talented players. And I think that maybe you can get so far with real individual creativity or somebody like Joey Carberry who shoots the light out off the tee. But you, as I said, it's only going to be so far. Like, you need to develop structures around that, or you need to get the most out of what you have at your disposal.
Yeah, well, like, it's interesting because we're talking about the Munster game. There's two ways you could look at that. Like, great win for Connacht, great win for Leinster, and we'll talk about Ulster in a minute. Mm-hmm. But in terms of Munster, they really eked out a win. Again, showed the kind of spirit that you'd expect from them to kind of come, and you never thought they were going to, never really, like, I mean, it was one of those situations where they didn't have a huge amount to play for by just winning the game. They just couldn't lose by more than seven. If they lost by more than the bonus point, they were out and Exeter were through. So it was one of those games which was really good in the last 20 minutes where Exeter were leading by a point and wanted to get the try to get ahead, but Munster also wanted to win the game. Yeah. So you had this really defensive, hard knocks, attritional battle, but both teams were trying to score.
Yeah.
You know, so in a way it was almost paradoxical, but it was brilliant. I really, really enjoyed it, and I thought it was just this great game of rugby. If you look at these two teams, have played each other twice, and the combined score, I think, is 19-17. Or so, you know.
Because of the draw, 10, yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
And 19-17 over two games of rugby. And I thought that both games were fantastic. And so that's an interesting, they're two very well matched teams. I think Exeter give Munster an awful lot of problems. I think that you have to take that into account. I think Munster by far had the toughest of the games this week, maybe along with Ulster obviously going away to Leicester and coming away with a win. But also there is that point you mentioned can't be overlooked, that Munster just don't look like the finished article at the moment. They just look like there's just that little bit of polish missing from them at the moment where they don't. I mean, that example I used, the Conway, if you watch that on TV, on, I don't know if you're watching BT or Virgin Media, but on the BT commentary, Keith Wood just gets absolutely exasperated. He's just going like, you haven't been in the 22 all game. Yeah. And you can't waste your chance like that. Just have some bloody patience. And he couldn't have summed it up better, you know, because it wasn't, and it was still Conway was trying a little bit of magic and he has that in him, but Munster just didn't have the composure because I don't think that they were built on the structures that you're talking about.
Yeah, so, and you can't always use that bit of magic to unlock a defence. Like, they have players who are undoubtedly capable of it, but you can't, you know, you can't rely on them to sum that.
You have to know the time to go for the magic. Yeah, and if you want to go back to the NFL again, it's like the Tom Brady knows, or Mahomes knows when to throw the bomb, and it looks like it's this kind of random look thing. But if you're listening to Tony Romo in the commentary, who suddenly makes us all understand how much goes through a quarterback's head, you realise that, no, they've this planned. The bit of random magic isn't random at all, you know, and it's the exact same here. It's like you have to know your time and place to try that little trick.
Yeah, you don't have to embed in strike plays for every single thing. You can rely on your skill set in certain scenarios, but it's the idea of having strike plays that will get you go forward ball or will get players like Earls or Conway involved in a move, like where you can exploit. Like, you look at what Leinster were doing at the weekend, like such a standard thing that they used throughout the game was O'Brien, who's playing at eight, breaking off the back of a scrum and offloading to Henshaw, who's flying off his shoulder. There's no great creativity there, but it guarantees go forward ball. Like, either of those two players running down a 10-12 channel are going to break the gain line and they're going to get yards. And then, based off that, you might look at a skill set and you might look at a Jordan Lammer to get a break or whatever outside of that. But you have, like, you build the house from the ground up and you have attack structure, you start from the base up. And sometimes that was kind of lacking in what Munster did, I thought.
I don't want to overlook Ulster because going away to Leicester we talked about Leicester a good bit. Leicester turned up. They wanted to win the game. They definitely didn't want to be beaten. And Ulster just showed a lot of heart. And, you know, in a very similar way to as Munster did in Thomond, but coming from just a much lower base and much lower expectations in Ulster. And they were just determined, I think, to turn their story around this season and this weekend. And I thought they were fantastic. And I have to say, the last 10, 15 minutes, the one thing that just kept jumping out to me was that there was a 36-year-old bald man in a scrum cap running around well 90 minutes into a game in real time. And hitting every ruck first, head first down. Like, the leadership that Rory Best gives to this team, as well as the Irish team, is just incredible. And he just leads by example. But it is actually incredible to think that he is, 36 years old.
And it's a testament to his career that, I mean, the guy who, as you said, is 36 years old, has come through a pretty rotten run of injuries, and also a kind of a bad patch of form last year, looks totally assured in position, despite the fact that his number two is the tied try scorer in Europe this year, in terms of what the form Cronin is in right now. He's in scorch, and there's a possibility that he won't start a single Six Nations game despite that.
Don't think that there's any hope of it, to be honest. The fact that Best has the captaincy, and I think that because he's trusted, and I think if he stays fit and the back-to-back weeks are working okay, I think Cronin will get a lot of game time, but I don't think he's any hope of getting the two jerseys.
Yeah, and I think Best is a testament to the stuff we talked about this with Eric O'Sullivan as well, the stuff that coaches love. Best is a phenomenal scrummager, which I think was it the second test against Australia last summer when Cronin, you literally saw him lose his bind and break, and it proved really costly on their own try line. They lost the ball against the head. This is stuff that coaches will notice. Obviously they're going to notice tries, or I mean, Cronin's darts have been really good this year, but the stuff that Bess was, like his ruck, his sport lines, his ruck, he can also do stand-up stuff like that, offload he threw against Munster, these kind of evolutions. That's stuff that will stand to him. And I guess when you're looking at an England squad or the game for the England team and that kind of dirty work, especially if we're not going to have Byrne or Henderson, he's the guy who'll source that ruck, who'll be there every time, and we'll get down dirty like that way.
Yeah, John Cooney, unbelievable off the bench again. You see what they're doing. And that's an interesting tactic in itself in the game that you should think about, is who are these people who are going to come on in an away European tie that you have to win after 50 minutes or 55 minutes to make an impact, and who's going to be on the pitch for me at the end of the game. There's a party that doesn't understand why Cooney isn't starting for Ulster at the moment, but he won the game for them.
Yeah, and I mean, he definitely looked fit for me when he came on. I don't know.
Do you think it was just a fitness thing?
I think it was, yeah.
Right,
yeah,
okay. Because I was wondering, was this sort of, this is a, you sacrifice the first 50 minutes so that you can get
these guys
in mismatches at the end, you know?
I think it was just a fitness thing. I don't think there's, the form he's in, I know last week might not have gone exactly to plan for him, but I don't think it comes down to Anthony other than fitness. I also think it's just it's one of my favourite stories in terms of what happened there with, I know Ulster fans were so furious about what happened with Ruan Pienaar, and they had certain reasons to be so, and probably valid reasons, but to see an Irish guy go up there and just absolutely thrive and evolve his game to take over the goal kicking for them and be phenomenally accurate off the tee, and now what that means for the Irish, the whole reason that happened with Pienaar was because to try and establish depth, which, for example, in a scenario where you lose the starting out half in Leinster and the starting out half in Connacht, that you have a guy who's fully able to deputise for Conor Murray when we go to England in the first couple of negotiations. And that's what Cooney brings now, as opposed to a scenario where you might only have one or two.
Yeah, and it's an interesting thing. We're going to talk about it. We're going to look at the Irish team that we think to face England. And I think the bench is just as an important part of that. And they are starting to fall a little bit. And it's the first kind of borderline injury crisis, you would say, that we've had in a couple of years. And at the moment, it hasn't hit the front line players, but, that could all, add two more to that, and suddenly Ireland are in crisis. And we'll talk a little bit about that in a minute. I want to talk just quickly the quarterfinals. Interesting one. Racing and Toulouse, the only two French teams left. Racing at home with that one. That should be an unbelievable game.
Yeah.
Toulouse, you kind of think they could do it, They're outperforming Racing in the league. Racing, obviously, lost to Ulster there a couple of weeks ago, but got the job done against the Scarlets. Another really high scoring game that they tend to be in. Leinster versus Ulster,
which we talked about last week.
We did. It was 47.
Yeah.
And at Christmas, and I don't know where that that gets made up, if you know what I mean, yeah, between now and then. You think it'll be closer than that, but you do worry for Ulster. But I think them being in the quarterfinals is the achievement here. Edinburgh versus Munster.
Yeah, which is a kind of a fascinating game.
We knew this was coming too, yeah, but yeah.
Munster, obviously, despite the fact the top of the pool, they're on the road against an Edinburgh team who are in kind of inspired form lately. I think that's...
It's the most winnable of the away quarterfinals.
Yeah, so, and yeah. It's also it's a potentially season-defining game. Like, if they crash out of Europe there and so far on. Like, I think it's a game that could really rejuvenate the season. I think they would have legitimate expectations to at least get back to a semi-final this year. And yeah, it's a winnable game in that regard.
Yeah, and Saracens and Glasgow is the other one. Now, I don't want to talk, like, there's an interesting two angles to this here. One is that there's five Pro 14 teams in the last eight.
Yeah.
It's the first time in 7 years, I think, maybe 8 years, 7 years, that three Irish teams have made the quarterfinals. It's one of those things that you watch these games and you almost expect people to qualify for the group and you forget how incredible an achievement that is, that there's only... You know, there's only five groups here, and the three of them have produced an Irish quarterfinalist out of three, of course. And it's the first time ever that two Scottish teams have made the quarterfinals, which is a remarkable thing in itself. And we talked a little bit about the revival of both the Scottish clubs a little bit in itself, but even for the Pro 14, you know, and you had like the Scarlets falling back a little bit this year, you don't think they're actually that far off. Yeah. They could come back with, you know, really bad injuries, you know, that they could have been there or thereabouts as well. You know, now, unfortunately, that would have been at the expense of Ulster anyway, so you still would have only had five, but the real, real contenders there. And that's a great thing to see. Is it down to relegation and protectionism and all this? I don't know, but it's by far the dominant league in the Champions Cup at the moment. The other side of it then is something you want to talk about, which is one English club for the second year in a row in the quarterfinals of the Heineken Champions Cup, a competition designed to help English teams. Yeah. And it's just Saracens. It's always Saracens. Yeah. There's nobody else. What's going on?
Like, it's such a confusing situation scenario when you see what they've done to change the pool system the way it is now. And then, like, the relegation point, I just don't buy that. I mean, the only team that were at any threat of relegation this year was Newcastle, because they're bottom. But I mean, Wasps and Gloucester are 10 points clear of them. So what's... I don't think that's fair justification. In fairness, I mean, like, I saw Gordon Murphy, we spoke about Leicester there. I saw Gordon Murphy's interview after the game, and he, you know, he said he was devastated. He quote said devastated. He was really disillusioned with their performance in Europe. So it's not as if it's not coming from a place of desire.
I've watched Leicester, Gloucester, and Exeter in the last 2 weeks for 80 minutes each, and none of them weren't trying to win those games.
Yeah.
And Gloucester and Leicester were out. You know, Exeter at least had a chance to qualify for the quarterfinals, but like, they're going for it. They're giving it them all. They're all. Is it? If it's to blame for the league situation, rather than talent, it's because of fatigue and tiredness rather than desire.
Yeah, that's which is probably a fair enough point. Like, I know there was a lot of Munster fans got very upset with a report in the UK media after the Gloucester game when somebody flagged the fact that, you know, like, 21 of 23 Munster players had actually played against Connacht before. But I think his point was that I think only three of them had actually started the game, that despite the fact that they were given minutes, they weren't drained. You know what I mean? They weren't. It's not as if you're condensing down. And I mean, there's ample data to support the fact that, you know, Owen Farrell has been way more minutes than Johnny Sexton is right now. Vinopola is playing more minutes than CJ Sander. Like, Ben Young's playing more minutes than Conor Murray. And that fatigue will obviously carry into elite player performance. I don't think that explains it all.
But are they, like, isn't it also the fact that in a world when Ireland are currently better than England, or at least on a par with them, you know, and better than France, or at least on a par with them, you know, at the, you know, give or take a month or two or a season or two, that having four teams versus your teams being spread out over 20 or 12 or 15 or whatever it is, you know, just ultimately makes a difference. And you would expect the Irish clubs to be stronger.
I guess,
and that's even not taking into account the fact that people come from all around the world to play in the Premiership in the top 14.
Yeah, and I mean, like, when you think about what happened with Leinster and Munster the 3 years ago when they first faded away, and we saw this new structure coming, and we thought that was the end of it.
And I guess
that's both a testament to the organization and the hierarchy of Irish rugby. And I also think, like, there's a point. Stuart Barnes, for example, was writing in his column in the Sunday Times yesterday, and he's like, I thought one interesting line, like, I think it was one of the most damning criticisms I've read anywhere, and this is a guy who's heavily involved in the English game, and he said, you know, one area where the English always excel is excusing their on-field failures. My new favourite is that because the sums of the European table are insufficient, the English sides have decided to make the Premiership a priority, much as France, but Toulouse and a few exceptions, did in the first decade. The vision of England clubs retreating back into the financial riches of the Premiership comes across not so much as an ignominious sporting Brexit, but a simple rugby exit, England out. I think there's an interesting point in that, in what he's actually talking about there.
Yeah.
Like, he's, the first point also is that there's always an excuse coming from somewhere. I think there's something in that. And we saw, like, for every Griffin Dempsey, you know, or Gordon Murphy fronting up and admitting that their performance isn't good enough, you've got somebody like Steve Diamond who gives out about budgets relentlessly, despite the fact that in the same week he can sign two New Zealand players. I mean, and the point there isn't about salary caps. The point there is that his priority in that, I mean, using a salary cap, is to bring in New Zealand players and not develop your own players, like, for example, Leinster might do.
Yeah.
So, and that's where the distinction there comes. In terms of his second point about the, you know, stacking the riches, and everything, the riches in Europe is such a multi, like, variable thing. You're talking about, like, commercial success for teams like Leinster. You're talking about gate revenues and things like that. You see Wasp in a half empty stadium at the weekend. Like, all that stuff is influencing your, you know, financial ability from these tournaments. And,
like, and Wasps playing in Coventry in itself, I know they've been there a long time.
Yeah, that's down to structure.
But that's, like, a London club playing 150 miles away, or I don't know how far away it is, but Coventry's in the Midlands.
Yeah.
It's nowhere near London. You know, like, it's closer to Birmingham. Just things like that that don't make any sense, that are done for weird commercial reasons, that, you know, it's not exactly the Dodgers moving to LA, but it's so far from ideal. I don't know what they get out of it.
Like, I guess the kind of, to finish up on this point here, is the point is that when you look at what Edinburgh have done this year in terms of utilizing the what's at their disposal, what Connacht have done this year in terms of unit disposal, or what Leinster do in terms of unit disposal, what is happening in England now is they're not being as efficient as the means that they have at their disposal. And that's just a fact. That's just a, like, you can talk about why they're not being as successful in Europe, but right now they're not getting the most out of what they have.
Yeah, and you alluded that 2 weeks ago, last week, that, like, you know, oh, here we are now, we'll change the structures for them again. And whether that discussion happens or not, or whether it happens,
I think it
or
will
not,
happen.
Like,
yeah.
I think we'll at least be having a discussion about it soon, because that's where the money is. But, like, what they need to do is figure it out here within it. It's still the same competition for everyone. As you said, it's not about relegation. It's like, okay, there is definitely an advantage there that Munster and Leinster, for the most part, are good enough to win Pro 14 games with their second team. It's not that they don't. It's they have better records in the Pro 14. You know, it's not that they're. It's not about relegation or even European qualification. That's all been sorted out. It's just that they're so much better than the rest of the pack, and that isn't the case in all of, like, Premiership matches, and that's fair enough. But at the same time, there's no reason why, if Leicester are in fifth place in the Premiership, that they can't target Europe over the Premiership.
Or even
if that's what they want to do, if they want to stay target domestic and that's where their entire focus is, then that's their decision. But you can't be going around changing structures because they've made a decision.
But even if it comes down to something, like, it doesn't have to get as complicated as structures. It can come down to something as simple as scheduling. Like, why are Exeter, Rob Baxter cited this after the game, why are Exeter, Munster, who played last Friday and then played again on Saturday, why are Exeter fixed for play games on Sundays in the Premiership if they're playing on Saturdays in the championship? Like, why can't you just organize it so you at least give them the same break that the Pro 14 is given to somebody like Munster? That's such a simple, like, a really simple fixturing issue that would go some way towards alleviating these concerns about playing minutes, alleviating these concerns about, you know, rest and recuperation for these players. And even at that level, it's such a fundamental level, by the way, that's not even being done.
Exactly. And if you're not even going to do that, then please don't come at us with the bigger stuff. Like, absolutely. Look, we're going to talk more about England next week. We've got a lot planned because it's going to be just a week or a few days, really, from the start of the Six Nations, which I can't believe is Ireland England. Like, I know it's a 1 in 5 chance, but it just feels like a remarkable and, like, kind of like, just a remarkable way to start the Six Nations, but also kind of like heart attack stuff that it just could be. And I know it was France last time, and, you know, but there's something even about Ireland-England that just feels like you need a bit more build-up to it. Anyway, next week's show, We're going to talk about England, where they are, why Eddie Jones is picking a squad directly to beat Ireland and not to win the Six Nations, apparently, if you'll believe anything out of that man's mouth. And we'll talk about the players to watch. We'll talk about who's coming up and who's going to be the new people. We'll talk about Premiership structures and form and how that might help the national team, even if it doesn't help or help or hinder the national team, regardless of what it does to the club's performances in Europe and stuff like that. So lots on England next week. But seeing as it is Ireland-England, seeing as we are now in Six Nations seasons, now that the quarterfinals of the Champions Cup have been decided, we've got a week of Pro 14 next week, but, you know, that is what it is.
Yeah.
You know, for all our, for everything we say here, the truth is the complete opposite. Yeah. But, so Pro 14 doesn't really matter this weekend, unfortunately, and we're into Six Nations now. So we've been looking a little bit at the potential Irish team. I'm going to run through it, just with the obviouses,
yeah,
and then we'll stop on the... I have four potential conversations.
Okay, yeah.
I think in real life there's probably only two.
Yeah.
Okay? So we're absolutely agreed on a front row of Healy, Best, Furlong,
yeah,
with a bench of McGrath, Porter and Cronin.
Yeah.
There's no discussion there.
No, I don't think so.
Okay. Second row, suddenly you got interesting. Toner and Ryan are basically guaranteed now because man of the match in Leicester versus Ulster, Ian Henderson, and man of the match in Exeter, Munster and Exeter, Tadhg Byrne, both ruled out, at least for the England game,
yeah,
anyway, for the first couple of rounds of the Six Nations. Ian Henderson coming back, first game back, wasn't even expected back, was absolutely brilliant, played for the whole game, and injures his finger. And you're thinking, oh, that's a re-injury. No. It was his thumb was out before.
Yeah.
It's a separate injury on his finger.
Yeah.
And he's out again. And you're thinking, oh, for God's sake, like, you know.
The same way Tadhg Byrne does in defence. I think Delaney reminds me of that in attack.
Yeah.
The way, but his way Connacht have really utilised him now. And a coach like Jimmy Duffy, who is the guy who, you know, did it so much from when he came from Munster to Connacht, now coaching the forwards in Connacht. And he seems to be kind of thriving underneath that. I think I'd be very excited to see what he can actually do in this game.
So would I. I think when he kind of burst on the scene 4 or 5 years ago, I think everybody was,
yeah,
absolutely blown away by him. And he's a kind of a unique look and a unique style of play. And I think people will be delighted to see him back. While it's still being an absolute pity that Henderson and Byrne are both gone, at least for the first couple of weeks. Back row, Pinar Mattany at 6, CJ Sander at 8 are guarantees. There's no real discussion there. The option is at 7. We still don't have Dan Levy, but Sean O'Brien is back. Josh Van der Fleer is there. I'm thinking it's Van der Fleer, and I think that Sean O'Brien as a bench back row is an incredibly exciting prospect, and I've been kind of waiting for it for about a year now, and I really hope Sean O'Brien can make it through the Six Nations injury-free, I have to say, first of all. But Sean O'Brien as a bench player can come on, cover any of the positions. I love the idea. Pinar Mattany generally kind of gives it the greatest 60 minutes of his life, and then
yeah,
it'll be kind of brought aside, you know, in an international sense with nothing left in the tank. You bring on Shawnee there, move CJ to 6 and Sean O'Brien to 8 with Van der Fleer, and that's suddenly just such a dynamic back row that just adds that little bit of, you can just imagine it would bring chaos in the last 20 minutes of an international game.
And I think that's a testament for the entire bench we've listed when you're talking about the likes, bringing on someone like Cronin, Porter, McGrath, Delaney, and then possibly O'Brien. And I think that would be a phenomenal...
Would you agree on Van der Fleer over O'Brien?
Despite the fact that Josh Van der Fleer has been in incredible form and once again at the weekend was the leading tackler without missing one, and has done so for Ireland and filled in for Levy last year and did exceptionally well, I think when it comes to Joe Schmidt, Sean O'Brien has enough credit in the bank that...
And that's fair too. I completely see where you're coming from there, and I think it's absolutely fair. And Sean O'Brien is a legend of Irish rugby, and he's shown nothing to suggest that any of that's gone either, that where he's not living on borrowed time or anything like that. I'm just wondering, with so little rugby under his belt, is that the way forward for him? Is that a new role that he can fulfill and fulfill well? And we were talking earlier in the show about how important that bench role is, you know?
Yeah.
So, halfbacks again, no contention, obviously, as to the starters, Murray and Sexton. Joey Carberry's going to be more of a benefit than he's ever been before because of the type of rugby he has under his belt at the moment, which is fantastic. But, you know, McGrath's out.
Definitely, yeah. And Marmion.
And,
yeah.
and Marmion's gone, yeah. which, like, you know, they're, again, it's in the similar way to the two bench players, the two players vying for one bench position, both gone at the same time. And it's going to be John Cooney, isn't it?
Yeah, I think, like, it will be, yeah.
It almost needs to be at this stage.
I think,
yeah,
it will, so. And that's not...
And that's exciting. That's that. You, sorry to interrupt, but you never want to take a Six Nations as the warm-up to the World Cup. It has to be its own thing. We have to go out and win it. But when things like this happen, you do want to see a few players.
Yeah.
And you do want to see, is like, I want to know what John Cooney looks like in an Irish jersey before we go to Japan.
Yeah. And, like, it's not to slight somebody like Caelan Blade, who I think dictates tempo really well for Munster, and is, you know, is constantly keeping pillars really honest. I really like that about him, the fact that if a pillar is even half a foot over or is not focus on that, he'll have a snipe and regularly get breaks. But it's just the form that Cooney's in right now. He was involved in the Irish camp in November as well. In terms of his kicking, I think that's a real nice asset to have in a player like that. We've seen oftentimes when Sexton, towards the end of a game, Murray might take over the kicking duties. It's nice to know that Cooney can also do that if he was to come on in that scenario. So I think he'll probably get the nod there, which kind of moves us on to a really interesting, probably the most interesting, I think, battle right now.
Absolutely. This is the one. This is the one that I don't know what he's going to do. Because we've assumed for 2 years now that the first choice centre partnership for Ireland has been Henshaw and Ringrose.
Yeah.
Right? That was the assumption. Bundiaki comes in, throws a spanner in the works, is incredible in every game, and the three of them have not been there at the same time.
And then you add Chris Farrell into the mix as well.
You add Chris Farrell. I think in this case, you can add Chris Farrell as a conversation point, but I don't think it's a realistic thing to say that he's going to be starting over one of those three.
Yeah.
So I think it's a battle for one place.
Yeah, it is. And I also,
it's a battle of three people for two places.
I actually think it's a battle of, right now, I think actually it's a battle of two for one. I think Ringrose starts. I think the form he's in for Leinster, what he's done for Ireland, I think that, like, it's an unbelievable scenario to be in, that Bundiaki has been one of Ireland's leading players in 2018. Like, he was outstanding, and throughout Six Nations in Australia and then also in the November Internationals, not just against New Zealand but also against Argentina, I thought he was one of our best players as well. And the fact that he is looking increasingly likely to drop out of this.
I think you agree with me. I think he's going to go with
Henshaw. I think he probably will, because... And
Henshaw's a unique Henshaw player as well. Minutes, like a unique talent.
He is, yeah. And but I think they all have that. Like, I think they're really unique prospects in all of them. Like, you've got a guy... There's always this argument with 13. Like, should you go for somebody who, you know, like a Brian O'Driscoll, who's just an offensive weapon, or Ringrose? Or should you go for, like, a big ball carrier thing? And Farrell is a bit of a combination of both, in terms of that he's a huge physical presence, but he's also got great handling ability.
Farrell's not getting in there, Maris. I don't know how many ways to tell you.
I think that's definitely one to keep an eye on, because Josh...
Farrell over a Ringrose?
In terms of Farrell coming in on the bench instead of...
Oh, possibly
Bundiaki.
On the bench. Okay,
I think in terms of where the hierarchy is at, the way Farrell played for England, the credit has been right there. I
don't think so. I think Jordan Larmour is basically a guaranteed place on the bench.
Yeah, I think
He always goes by the utility. Basically, it's the one position that you have to cover five, and it's probably the most important selection for a bench player, because they have to fill in everywhere. And I think that him going with a specialist centre is just something that Joe Schmidt doesn't do.
Yeah.
So I think that if Aki misses out, if Farrell, whoever, I don't think they're getting on the bench.
Really? Yeah.
Yeah, no, I don't. You've only got one place.
Yeah, and that scenario, I actually think, would be Will Addison, because he's so versatile, and because of what he did in November, which, I mean, incredible...
Yeah, well, we'll see who's in the back three, because as you said, if Rob Kearney is there, it's Larmour, if it is Larmour. So that's 15 is basically a choice between the two of them. If you say that Kearney's going to play
Pro 14 this weekend,
again, talking about credit in the bank with Sean O'Brien, Kearney has plenty of that.
Yeah.
If he shows any kind of form, if he shows like that he's up to full speed, I think he starts.
Definitely. Yeah.
And then you're talking on the wing, it's going to be Earls and Stockdale, the only person really putting their head in the door with that one is Andrew Conway. And I think that has to be taken seriously.
Yeah.
And I have to say, on form, there's a lot. Like, if you ask me the form lines of Conway versus Earls, I'd say it's probably Conway. One more time, I'm going to go back to credit in the bank. And just the little things that Earls does. Like, that's that tackle in the corner
was amazing,
against Gloucester
yeah.
last week. You know, he's just they were the things that Keith Earls 6 years ago wasn't doing. And also, and now he's nearly the best defensive back three player we have, you know?
When you talk about the things that, something we go back to, like coach indicators, things that coaches will be really impressed with, something that Joe Schmidt will certainly not be impressed with is Connolly kicking the ball into touch there when he was in his 22.
Yeah.
And that's something that Earls would not do. Like, as a finisher like him, it's just not in his ability. Same on the other side, you know, you look at someone like Porter, the try that he conceded when, as a pillar, he drifted across. Like, that's something that would infuriate a defensive coach like Andy Farrell or somebody like Joe Schmidt. They're the things that you really have to drill down. Like, that's your, you build from the ground up, and they're things that you get down. So I think, in terms of that kind of stuff, I think Earls probably edges that as well.
Do you think Kearney will make it just before we...
Yeah, I do think he will. Yeah, I think he's definitely going to play, get minutes against Scarlett. And as you said, I think there's probably... I don't think there's another prospect in our rugby who will cover the backfield as well as he does. And if we're going to continue with this 14-man in defensive line and you get one player back, he's the man who
so
will do that.
So our team, and this isn't our team, this is the team we think, more so, that will start against England. And it's bloody here, I can't believe it. Like, it doesn't feel that long ago since November. I'm so happy that Six Nations is here. Our team that we're starting with is Healy, Best, Furlong, Toner, Ryan, O'Mahony, Stander, Van der Fleer. Or no, O'Brien. Yeah, sorry, O'Brien, we went with O'Brien. Yeah. Sorry, in the end, Jay, you overruled me on that one. Murray and Sexton, Henshaw and Ringrose, poor Bundiaki, Earls, Kearney, and Stockdale. Stockdale's guaranteed, obviously, on the left wing. I'm kind of saying that backwards. With a bench then of McGrath, Cronin, Porter, Ulton Delan back in, Josh Van der Fleer, I would imagine, although there's always the option then of having an eight, like, you know,
or Jack somebody Conan like Ruddock, who's in great form and can cover the second row as well, so
yeah,
I think
absolutely that's a possibility. But I'd say probably Van der Fleer, given the amount of injuries that happen in the back row as well, you would want your seven kind of going in there. O'Brien can always move across. I think it does make sense to have him there. Cooney, Carberry, and Larmour almost certainly.
Larmour or
Conway.
I personally, I think it's Larmour or Addison. I think in terms of the ability to cover across back, in terms of a back option, I think, like, there's really Will Addison was kicking for us there recently. He can play across the centre.
I have to say, now I'm just putting that out there, that I would be absolutely shocked if Addison makes the match day 22
really,
against
would you,
England
yeah.
anyway. Maybe by the end of the Six Nations, but I would be like, I would be fall off my chair shocked.
I see a very good possibility. I actually think it's nearly more likely that he'd go with Addison on the bench than Larmour, which is, I know, is kind of there, but just in terms of a player, he loves versatility. That's what this guy does. Yeah. And he was a boat. Nobody really saw him getting the minutes that he did. Like, this is a guy who played in three different positions in three different games in November and did admirably in all three in terms of playing the wing, fullback, and also going in centre at 13. He can also be played at 12. He's kicking for us too. Like, this is stuff that I'm not talking about. He's not in the conversation for to start.
He only played against Argentina, didn't he?
No, he played at the USA game on the East. There was a HIA for somebody got a head knock. Oh, Sweetham got a head knock early in the game. He came on the wing in that game. He also moved across to fullback in the same game. So
he's got this.
It was Sweetham got early, 20 minutes in. It was after, we didn't know, was it tactical or was it physical? But it turned out that afterwards they said it was physical. So
I'm glad we have a disagreement on that, because it was a little bit too kind of... you overruled me on Sean O'Brien. You weren't having any discussion about my grand plan to unlaunch a new Sean O'Brien.
And
on the
by the
world.
Way, I
but
think,
that's fine.
Yeah.
That's you know.
I think just as a final point, it's important to say that from an Irish rugby perspective, nobody would have any issue if Bundiaki starts or if you know.
I think a few people might have an issue, but they're always going to have an issue.
In terms of the drop off is virtually nil. So that's the thing, isn't it?
We're looking at a team that's come off the greatest year in the history of Irish rugby. They've beaten New Zealand in their last meaningful game. And we're talking about wholesale changes here. And we're almost disappointed in ourselves when we go with the boring team here.
Yeah,
we're like, oh God, is it not just like, should we not just drop Keith Earls for the sake of it to try something new? You know, it's like, there's no need to drop any players.
Yeah,
it's only a couple of months since they beat New Zealand. This is a team that's proved itself. But what you're saying is so true there. What we have at the moment is just this ability to get on with it when somebody's not there.
Yeah.
You know, and what it gives us then is opportunities, because how the hell was Ulton Delan going to get onto the field for Ireland with those four guys ahead of him? How the hell was John Cooney? when Kieran Marmion and Luke McGrath have been like fighting for scraps for years now.
Yeah.
Doing everything in their power to get into that team. How was Cooney ever going to pass them out? You know, they'd proved themselves to Joe so many times in training and schemes and games when they need to come on, standing on the wing in Marmion's case, you know?
Yeah.
They always did what they were asked to do. That like, your form is never going to make someone like Joe Schmidt go, I've had enough of that guy, you know? But you have that opportunity, and now we're excited to see these guys.
Yeah,
they're going to play against England in one way or another. Mm-hmm. Well, you never know. Murray's sometimes the guy who doesn't come off, the poor scrum half, the only person who doesn't get the run. Right, well, look, that's a week and a half away now, just.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, a little bit more. But Saturday week.
It's like what a weekend to kick things off as well. You've also got
Wales and France.
Yeah,
on the Friday night.
You've got the under 20s also playing England, which is.
I'll be at that down in Cork.
Yeah, and
Irish Independent Park,
kind of a new home for them, and a game that we spoke to Noel McNamara last week. They're really looking forward to that game and kind of trying to, like, it's like a benchmark. It's kind of in the same way it is for the seniors. It's a great one to open your campaign with. Yeah. You can make a kind of a statement.
I think we're going to hear from a couple of the players. You were talking to them. We'll have them on next week's show. Mm-hmm. And also we'll talk a little bit about the women's international and how and they'll be playing England also. I want to see how they're going to get on in this year's Six Nations after a kind of a up and down couple of years for them. Niamh Briggs, I've seen, left out of the squad. She hasn't kind of made it back after kind of some horrible injuries, you know, but it was still kind of just a disappointing thing to see that someone like Niamh Briggs has kind of been cast aside, you know.
Yeah.
But maybe that's a good thing. Maybe that's a sign that there's a new generation coming and that there's kind of an ability to kick on at last from that kind of like golden era of the Grand Slam and the...
Which was an undercurrent of 2018, was this idea of introducing new players and hopefully that kind of... that offers as a betting in process that year, and that's something that now you're kind of all of a sudden looking to them maybe to carry some slack and kind of kickstart things to come, you know, move forward.
So we'll talk a bit more about that next weekend. So there'll be a big kind of, like, we're going to talk a lot about England, as I mentioned, and we're going to talk about the other Irish teams as well as we build up to the Six Nations. We'll have a big show. Just briefly before we go, though, every time I flick around a rugby highlight show or anything like that, I'm just seeing this speedy man on a wing in light blue and white hoops bopping in tries. I don't know, has Simon Ziba played the game for Racing yet where he hasn't scored a try? I'm not sure. I don't know if there has been one, but see him, he did his Ronaldo celebration
after
his
weekend again. Yeah,
his,
yeah.
Also his tribute to Teddy Thomas, his new friend. But he was also speaking about what happened, which we didn't actually mention last week. It just kind of, we talked about it before the show and it just slipped our mind that it didn't come up. But what happened to him in Raven Hill a couple of weeks ago, which was just such a shocking thing for an Irish player to have to go through. But he actually gave a brilliant interview at the weekend.
I thought it was class. Like, he spoke to Jim Hamilton for Rugby Pass and kind of just established the fact that, like, I think he handled it with a really respectable way. He immediately established the fact that 90% of it was he was booed, which was a team throughout the game, and 90% of that was good natured, and he actually was kind of laughing at it. He also spoke about how well the club have handled with it recently. Also, CEO has been in contact with him, and then he just pointed out the fact that he was really looking forward to coming back and playing in his country, and this incident happened, and that he said himself that if he didn't flag it, he kind of would have felt like he has to stand up for his reason. And one thing he cited was he didn't want to be weak for his kids, which I thought was a really kind of a powerful quote within that. And I also think there's an idea that what he was talking about there, I think there's a greater team to this in terms of what he meant when he said that it was something that happened to him when he was younger, and it was just disappointing to see that it was somebody who was older. It wasn't just kids, you know, when he came back now. It's like, that's, you know, both as a kid and as an adult, this has happened. And I think when you see that kind of thing, that's something that you should platform. And the story, like, to kind of fit with what we're talking about this interview, the story isn't what happened to Simon Ziebo in Racing Hill. The story is how Simon Ziebo, like, the story is Simon Ziebo kind of persevering, the fact that he can handle this the way he has, the fact that he can embed himself in rugby the way he has. Like, I think he's like a leading light for somebody. Like, Simon Ziebo is the reason you watch rugby. Like, Simon Ziebo is like a guy who will give you that kind of personal entertainment, and a guy, like, there's very few players who you could watch flair players a lot and will be, you know, really infuriating for a coach. But sometimes he was also just a proven finisher, you know what I mean? Yeah. There's a guy who can...
Oh, but sure, look, like, you're watching Zeebo, you know, ever since maybe the kick into his own hand against Wales that time, one of the most remarkable things. I don't think I've ever jumped up out of my seat as much watching something happen. But, you know, you watch Zeebo with Racing, and I've only watched a couple of games, but it's like as if this is the team he was always meant to play on.
Yeah,
and it's no offense to Munster and Munster and even Ireland at times, like, you know, and international level is obviously always going to be a lot tighter, you know. But it's like Munster could be as good a team, if not better, than Racing. It's not to do with that. It's just the style of play they play was always just never fully suited a player like Zeebo. Whereas now you just see him as that finisher and the end of things. He just looks unstoppable. He looks like, as you said, you mentioned a couple of weeks ago, he got onto like the French team of the season, having only played our team of the year, the team of the 2018, having only played the half a year, basically the first half of this season. So it just shows you the type of impact he makes. And look, all what you were saying aside, which is awful, there is a kind of a, I have a feeling, I don't know about the home and away draws for the semi-finals yet, but There's a good possibility Racing win and he could yet play in Ireland or at least have a game against Irish opposition this year, you would think, given the way the quarterfinal draws have panned out. So hopefully it's a better response this time. But
he's
also someone that we should continue over and over again to talk about the fact that we're going to a World Cup without him, and it's madness.
Yeah, it's crazy. Like, but he's also, I mean, he cited the message of support he's gotten from both fans and players already. I mean, that's, I think it's always the case. Like, the overwhelming majority of people are, you know, reasonable, and that's going to press out. But I also think that is also an interesting point as well, in terms of, we talked about options off the bench, we talked about people who are versatile. Zeebo is all of those things, and he's not even in the conversation for this Ireland squad.
Not in the conversation. He's not allowed to be in the conversation because he's not playing in Ireland. But sure, look, them's the rules, and we'll see how. I don't know if it's not going to be a conversation. Something that I'll mention every time I see him score a try for Racing this season, and even in reality, not even knowing what his actual form is, just seeing him score bits of tries here and there. But anyway, that's it. That's all the time we have for you today. As I said, next week, full on Six Nations preview. We're going to be focusing heavily on England as we see what awaits us in our first game in the Aviva Stadium on Saturday week. But until then, take it easy and enjoy whatever games you see between now and then.